Well, I could start out in 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. And we're just going to start at the very beginning of that chapter and read first few verses down to verse 8. It says, "Now it came about when Samuel was old that he appointed his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the same of his name of his second, Abijah. And they were judging in Beersheba. His sons, however, did not walk in his ways, but turned aside after dishonest gain and took bribes and perverted justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, 'Behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations.' But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to judge us.' And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, 'Listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the days I brought them up from Egypt, even to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now then, listen to their voice, however you shall solemnly warn them and tell them of the procedure of the king who will reign over them.'" God has ruled over Israel basically for about 400 years during the period of the judges. And when the people became wicked, God would send an enemy nation to conquer a portion of the land. And when the people turned back to God, he would raise up a judge to lead the people against the enemy and to teach the people how to live for God. Now, the last judge that God raised up was Samuel. He was a judge, he was also a priest, and he was a prophet of the Lord. And as the prophet Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as judges over Israel. But unlike their father, these boys were corrupt. And they took bribes, they perverted justice. But I want you to notice the people's solution to the problem. We have a problem. We got judges who are corrupt. So how do we fix that problem? Get rid of the judges and appoint us a king. That was their answer. We want to be like the nations around us. In other words, they didn't really fix the problem. They tried to avoid it by going a different direction. I've noticed in our country that we have a strong tendency to fix problems in similar manners. For instance, we have a problem with sexual promiscuity. Young people begin living together without a covenant of marriage, as we talked about this morning, in greater and greater numbers. So what's the solution to the problem? Well, the solution has been, we'll just ignore it. In fact, not only that, you know, there used to be laws in the books that was against cohabiting, without, you know, living together without being married. It used to be illegal. It was even within my days. I'm not that old. Getting there, but I'm not quite that old. So all the laws against cohabiting were removed from all the books. And all that remains is basically a few laws against living with somebody before a certain age. And guess what happens? Did that fix the problem? See, what they basically did was redefine it and say, well, it's no longer a problem because we're not calling it a problem. But take a look at Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1 and in verse 24. "Therefore God gave them over to the lust of their hearts, to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." And You would think, okay, well, we gave in, they allowed it there, that's going to stop right there, right? Well, no, it spread. You know, like for instance, adultery. While it's always been frowned on, and still currently frowned on, it's no longer illegal. It used to be illegal too. Divorce rises, as we talked about. More homes are broken than are whole. And we're looking at it and saying, how do we get here? And the answer is, we try to fix a problem with not a fix. You know, divorce has an impact on children. I read an article, this was quite a few years ago, it was actually in 2000. It was titled, Marriage Debate, Promote It, Fix It, or Move Past It. And here's one statement out of this article. Given the sizable body of research showing that children of single parents end up with poorer education, job prospects, and health, the fundamental issue, they say, is making sure that children are well cared for, whether or not their parents are married. Some even go so far as to suggest that marriage is part of the problem and not part of the solution. We notice that children who are raised by single parents, they don't do so well. How do we fix that? Well, we make all the children raised by single parents. Well, marriage is the problem. You know, imagine that. Is this any different from the Israelites who had problems with corrupt judges? So the solution is remove all the judges? That's basically what they're doing. Martha Feynman, a professor at Cornell Law School, said, this obsession with marriage prevents us from looking at our societal problems and addressing them. Marriage is nothing more than a piece of paper. This is what we're dealing with. They see a problem, they even know where it's coming from, but they have an agenda, and so what they really need can't be first on the list. If marriage was really just a piece of paper, then how is it that somehow this piece of paper has been improving the lot of children, giving them better educations and better environments to grow in, if it's just a piece of paper? And acknowledge it does fix it. People who are children raised in marriages do better. So how is it just a piece of paper? In fact, that same lady goes on to say, for children, the important thing is that there's enough adults to care for them, whether it's by married biological parents or by two or three or four others. If that's what we want people to do, that's what we should focus on, not marriage. She's basically saying, we'll solve this problem with quantity and not the quality. We just need extra bodies around. We need more people involved, and they'll fix all the problems, right? But the problem is it ignores a large body of studies showing that children do not do well with non-biological parents. True, they're better off than parents or children of single parents, but few single parents live alone. Most have live-in boyfriends or girlfriends. And having others around doesn't improve the child's situation. It's been documented. There's lots and lots of studies that show this. In fact, there's evidence that children with non-biological parents still don't do as well as children of married biological parents. The non-biological parents is often hampered. There's less commitment. And there's also higher incidences of abuse. Now, not that it happens all the time, but because there's a lack of commitment, abuse tends to go up. Andrew Cherlin, a sociology professor at Johns Hopkins University, is quoted as saying, "So the whole concept of single parenthood may need rethinking. It may be time to think about this in terms of unions rather than marriages." Can you see that pattern here? Anything but marriage. When all the information points to marriage as being a improvement. We talked about drugs this morning. This same illogical view of fixing problems by discarding righteousness can be seen in the legalizing of drugs. Drug use continues. And at times we're losing ground, and people admit that. So we fix the problem by making the drugs legal. Right? Because after all, the problem is with illegal drugs. So we'll just make the drugs legal, and now we won't have problems, right? But, you know, think about it. Consider the drug tobacco. It's a legal drug, right? And we agonize over its addictive qualities and the dangers that it presents to users. We want tobacco companies, which in turn means the users, to pay for the increased cost, that, you know, the medical costs and the dealing with the effects of tobacco. So how is legalizing substances, which we know are more addictive and more dangerous than tobacco, going to change things? And here again we have problems with people denying reality. You know, I have had people say, well, marijuana is just a plant. Yeah? So is tobacco. But they're against tobacco, but they're for marijuana. I just cannot fathom that. Oh, well, tobacco causes lung cancer. Yeah, so does marijuana when you smoke it. It has exactly the same problem. Actually, it actually has more tar in it than tobacco. Well, we got less, you know, evidence of it. Yeah, because society didn't legalize marijuana until just recently. It'll show up. It'll come here. But again, we're trying to fix problems the wrong way. We know what the problem is. We know where it needs to go, but we deny it and we go and promote it. Then there's a problem that's been noted about the suicide rate among the alphabet soup, the LGBTQ, but going on and on and on. There's actually 68 letters of that, which is why I just plus the rest of that. It started out with people trying to justify their sexual misbehavior. They sought out a cause. Well, there has to be a reason why homosexuality is present. But anything but that the person chose to be homosexual. And it goes through cycles. If you go through the past papers and read through it, it goes through cycles. It's the birth that caused it. No, that disproves it. It's the environment, either the environment in which the baby was raised or the environment in which the child was raised, but it's the environment. Oh, no, it's genetic. We just got finished going through the genetic phase. And it's been disproven yet again. And they're going back and cycling again. Each time it's disproved, it doesn't stop the supporters. They just go and find some other excuse. And actually, that's what led to this alphabet soup. You see, it was claimed that it was genetic, and it was proven it's not genetic. Well, then they started claiming was a different gender. Just like there's male and there's female. And now we got, there's a lesbian gender and a gay gender, and there's a transsexual gender. B is bisexual. Q is queer. I forgot what the rest of the soup goes. This is their current fad. This is how they're justifying it. It's a different gender, just like male and female. In other words, they're going back, they're just remodifying. They prove that it's not genetic. There's no gene. But they're pretending like it's genetic in some way. You know, homosexuality is supposedly being like male or female. But then, wait a minute, what about people who have sex with anyone? Well, then that's another gender. Well, wait a minute, what about those who don't want to have sex at all? Well, that's another gender. What about those who want to change their gender? Well, that's another gender. And they came up with 68 different listings now. I just read literally this afternoon. I was kind of curious, so I started reading it just because I just wanted to see what they said. And the person who wrote it basically says, well, the people who don't support evolution, they're denying science. Those same people, they're denying that there are more genders than there are just two. As if this was a crime against science. Supposedly, the acceptance of sexual sins and giving people choices and deciding their gender is going to make them happy. See, we're going to solve this suicide rate by making people, by saying, we're just going to accept you as you are. But you know what the studies show? The suicide rate in LGBT plus community is high. Even after people start accepting it. Here's one from 2021. After taking demographic factors into account, the researchers found that the suicide risk was 3 to 6 times greater for lesbians, gays, and bisexual adults than for heterosexual adults across every age group, race, ethnicity, category. No matter how you slice it, it's 3 to 6 times higher if you're among these people. Well, I thought the acceptance is supposed to take care of that, make them happy. Enabling people to become a different gender was sought to help. But according to a 30-year study in Sweden, 5 to 15 years after surgical reassignment, the suicide rate of those who had undergone sex reassignment surgery rose to 20 times that of comparable people. You allow them to change their gender, the suicide rate goes up 20 times. But if you think about it, changing a person's physical look is not going to change their DNA. A male may look like a female to some extent, but they're still male. Or the other way around. And thus the resulting conflicting emotions are creating additional conflicts. And people can't handle it. If you understand that there's a problem, if there, you know, suicide rate among a certain group is high, fix the problem. Don't tell people it's all right And in fact, make it worse, and then expect things to get better. See, these illogical fixes are actually making things worse. You look at, like, Israel. We're going to have a king. And God said, well, warn them what's going to happen. Israel had some glory days with a few kings. But the nation as a whole went downhill morally. You see, the problem was we had corrupt judges, right? The kings didn't make the nation more moral. Within three generations, Israel was split into two. The northern nation basically stopped following God. The southern nation, well, its decline was a little more gradual, but it still was a decline. And it eventually became as bad as the northern. Now, at the end, listen to what God says in Hosea chapter 13 about this. Hosea chapter 13 and in verse 9. It is your destruction, O Israel, that you are against me, against your help. Where now is your king, that he may save you in all your cities, and your judges of whom you requested? Give me a king and princes. I gave you a king in my anger, and took him away in my wrath. Now God at the end started looking and saying, you're the ones that demanded a king, and look where it took you. And you're expecting me to be happy about it? Think about the illogical fixes in our society. Has the situation of children improved by allowing people to live together without marriage? No. Hasn't. Gotten worse. So how is changing the meaning of marriage going to help? We know marriage is a better situation. Why do we feel that we need to change it? Will drugs become a rarity if we legalize it? Hasn't shown up so far. I keep looking at the statistics from Colorado and Washington. It's getting worse. It's getting out of control. We have problems here because it spills out of Colorado. Do you think it's going to get any better by keeping it legal? You know, will marriages become steadier if we continue to accept adultery as normal? In Isaiah chapter 55, God tells us that he doesn't think the way we do. He doesn't see the world the way we do. In Isaiah 55 and in verse 6, it's actually a section where people are saying, I'm just too wicked to be saved. And God's answer is, well, I don't see things the way you do. But it's generally true in a lot of aspects. Verse 6, it says, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord, and he will have compassion on him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. What God is basically saying is, you got problems? Start doing it my way. Because I don't think the way the rest of the world thinks. Its way destroys things. Yet we have a notion that we can fix society's ills by moving away from the standards which God has set for man. And it doesn't take an intellectual giant to understand then man is just too finite to decide between what is really right and wrong. Take a look at Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 10. And in verse 23, I know, O Lord, that a man's way is not in himself, nor is it in a man who walks to direct his steps. We just don't have that ability, and we show it and demonstrate it constantly. What really is needed is a humbleness of heart, willing to subject yourselves to God. In Matthew chapter 11, and in verse 25, at that time Jesus said, I praise you, Lord, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, for you have hidden these things from the wise and intelligent, and have revealed it to infants. You don't understand God by thinking you can outsmart him. You need the humility. You need to understand that we got to follow God. Because God is righteous, his ways are just, and following God's commandments will improve your life. So we accept God's call to be his child. There's an opportunity here this evening to do that very thing. And if there's anyone here who is a child of God, would like the prayers of his brethren on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.